proudly presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Thank you so much for all the listeners, the thousands of listeners. We appreciate the growth of the podcast. Those of you who tune in on Podbean, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you are, and on JoeBucksFan.com, the podcast posts first every Tuesday and Thursday. We appreciate it. Want to save money on a Cadillac? Make sure it's backed by Morse. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, right now, not only can you lease a 2018 ATS Coupe for just $349 a month, zero down, if you find a lower price on a new Cadillac, they will match it or refund you $500. That's the Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa Price Protection Promise. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. You can get all the details there, and you can also visit EdMorse.com/promise. for complete details on the Price Protection Promise. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, just west of Causeway Boulevard, right there, it's clearance time. Save up to $13,000 on remaining 2017 Cadillacs, and for a limited time only, get 0% for 72 months on the powerful Cadillac Escalade. Plus, you get free car washes for life. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard, visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com for all the details. Great pre-owned selection, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. We appreciate their support, and here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Happy Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. The podcast hits the road. We are in Orlando at the NFL owners meetings. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan is here. And the sage of Tampa Bay sports has been schmoozing, hounding, and berating and all kinds of things to all kinds of NFL officials. We just had breakfast with Dirk Cutter, so a lot of fun nuggets in this podcast. Of course, you heard Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon as our presenting sponsors. We are so proud, and Ira at the Ritz-Carlton, may I say, it is not often that you see a red Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Brandon shirt being brandished.
You know, I'm like Tiger Woods on Sunday. Wear red, baby. It's bring it home day. And may I add, Lee, that while our man Isbitz is with Cutter for 45 minutes to an hour, you and I are doing the heavy lifting over there at DeKemper. We're going around to 31 other tables looking for buck scraps, buck nuggets, and we're finding a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Steve, while we're doing this podcast, Dirk Cutter is probably on the sixth hole at Grand Lakes. You know, he's got a 7-iron in his hands. He's 120. You know, 8 yards away from the target. And I don't know who's in his foursome, but whoever's in it, he's asking if they got a running back to spare.
Andy Reid,
whatever. It was a heck of a morning.
A heck of a morning on the heels of a heck of a night.
I would suggest Steve's doing the heavy lifting this morning. He's got to transcribe 45 minutes of Cutter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just gave him a little bit of John Gruden. I just whetted his appetite a little bit.
All right, well, we got a lot to get to here, Ira, but we're going to try to go a little bit in order, a little bit of flavor. And there's plenty of news nuggets, and we'll have, of course, another podcast on Thursday as we sit here. Now, Ira, last night, fans don't realize there's an NFL media party. It's the one time a year where the NFL pays the bill, and there's all these high-end foods and open bar and high-end stuff.
And somehow the media is invited, Stephen.
And somehow the media is invited to mingle with the billionaires and Goodell and every head coach and their families, and GMs are everywhere, and it's a madhouse of insanity that they let schlubs like us in the door. Now, of course, you've got a sport coat. You're with your wife. Did anybody really invite your wife to the party?
It was a very nice sports coat, by the way.
It was very nice. Ira drags his wife in.
Drags. I wanted to meet Lee DeKemper, and mission accomplished.
You're the only one who gets to bring a guest, Ira. That's the way it goes here. But, you know, you were hounding all over the place.
Jason Light was in shorts, by the way. Let's throw that out there.
That's true. You did corner Roger Goodell, and maybe you could tell us about that.
Well, Lee, I bided my time. I waited till he had his third glass of wine. I believe it was Chablis.
You wanted to get him liquored up on
now,
the line.
Now, he was talking to Gary Myers, who just lost his job at the Daily News.
Lost or quit?
Lost.
Really?
Gary Myers lost his job. Shame on the Daily News. They're eliminating. He's the NFL writer, the NFL commentator. They're eliminating his position.
Are they going to blame this on Trump, too?
I don't know.
Like a local newspaper is?
So I'm standing behind Myers. It's like I'm in line for Goodell. I'm in line.
I told our listeners
that I'm a man on a mission out here, and I got to get to the bottom of this so-called, and I say it again, so-called Winston investigation. So I want to corner the commissioner. I'm behind Myers. I'm online. And I said, Gary, I only got one question for the commish. And I'm ready to move in, you know. And all of a sudden, this guy out of Boston, he comes floating in. And he starts talking to Goodell about golf. Hey, have you played Beth Page? When's the last time you played?
Field Yates?
Yeah, talking about the, no, I think it was Ben Volen.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Okay.
All of a sudden, they're talking about the 11th hole at Beth Page Black. I mean, I can't have this, Steve. I got serious NFL questions. So I butt in. I go, how'd you get ahead of me, Volen? I'm waiting over here with the commish. Commish turns to me. What do you need, Ira? I said, well, I don't want to talk about golf, Raj. He goes, all right, what is it?
Raj.
And Raj. And I go, what the heck? I think I said heck. I could have said hell, but I think I said heck. What the heck is going on with this Jameis Winston investigation? It's 4 months going on. There's no end in sight. And I said, me and my guys, we could have wrapped this up in about a day and a half. He laughed a little bit. He tipped his glass over. A little Chablis fell out. So here I am bracing for a big, you know, scoop or whatever. And he goes, Ira, I don't get very involved in the actual probe. I come in towards the end when I, you know, you got to hand out discipline if it's necessary. And the classic line, Steve, which we all hate, these things take time. I go, take time? When's this thing going to end? You going to spring in on the Bucks in September? He just laughed, and he went back to Ben Volen. He says, now about that 11th green, it's a little lumpy once in a while. And that was it. I was done with Roger Goodell, but I did ask the question, Steve.
Yeah,
so it doesn't seem like this thing is on the radar of the National Football League. Other things get resolved very quickly, like the Panthers situation. I guess you got to be best buddies with Roger Goodell, just like Jerry Richardson.
Well, that's exactly right. On Twitter this morning, when I say this morning, talking Tuesday morning, I'm messed up here.
Tuesday morning.
I only had about 4 hours sleep last night after several Crown and Waters. So, at any rate, I had a guy Twitter, Steve and I, and he was like, he basically asked, well, I guess Jameis doesn't have any kind of pull. And my reply was, I'll lay $100. Jerry Richardson has more pull with Goodell than Jameis Winston.
No question about
but,
it.
But I could just see Raj. Like,
yeah, Raj.
I could just see Ira. Here Goodell is wanting to relax, wants to talk about golf, enjoy his wine.
And here I come.
Ira's badgering the hell out of him about Jameis Winston.
Hey, Steve, last year in Phoenix at this time, we found out that the Bucks had O.J. Howard on their radar. We found that out. So you can get nuggets at something like that. And by the way, Steve, you left out, I can't believe you missed the lead here. You buried the lead in the story because the big story from last night is they had a beet salad. An absolute beet salad. I went to town with it.
They not only had a beet salad, the story is they had a beet salad station. Like they had a whole section of beet salads.
I'm over there looking for prime rib.
Of course, Lee, there was plenty of leftovers because nobody was touching it except for Ira.
Now, which one of you two guys, along with me, but it was separate incidents. Incidents, not the right word. Separate timing. Which one of you two guys were in line with Belichick?
I was not.
That's me. I'll tell that story real quick, Ira. I would call it the strangest moment of the night. I'm standing there, and I just happen to be standing next to Bill Belichick's girlfriend, and she's with Belichick. And
which line is this, Steve?
This wasn't a line. This was just standing there. You know, okay. It's a party. A lot of people. Yes, hundreds of people there.
So his fetching blonde girlfriend.
Yes, it just happened to be where I was positioned.
Spectacular?
Well, much younger than him, I'll say that.
No. You don't remember?
I said fetching.
Well, a couple of years ago, you dropped the word spectacular to the Seinfeld line.
Well, I'll let Steve continue on this. So did you make hay over there, Steve?
So somebody was talking football with Belichick. Somebody came up to ask him some questions.
That leaves you to talk to his companion.
No, I was just standing next to her. I was sort of listening, just hanging out a little bit. And he walks away, and all of a sudden, the guy talking to Belichick walks away. All of a sudden, she says, 3, 2, 1, go ahead. And I was just looking at her, and Belichick's just standing there. She's like, oh, I was sure you were going to be next to talk to Bill. I said, no, I'm just hanging out here. That's it. And he laughed, and
nice.
So they were surprised that I wasn't hounding them.
So you didn't ask him, did Malcolm Butler almost become a Buccaneer, as far as you're concerned, will you?
No, nothing right there on Belichick. Do you have an interesting moment? Of course, I had many, but anything interesting, Lee, stand out to you?
Well, I was in line right behind Belichick and his girlfriend, and it was a drink line, and I bailed after about 5 minutes because it was going nowhere. It was a long line. So I didn't talk to him or his girlfriend, but I was right behind them, but no, I didn't really have any I saw Chris Sims, who obviously works.
I did too.
Chris Sims. I didn't get to talk to him. I did talk to John Lynch brief. He said he had spoken to you when I spoke to John. He's like, yeah, I talked to Ira.
I saw Lynch's wife. I said to her, if you feel like slapping me in the face, go ahead. She goes, why would I do that? I said, because I'm 0-for-5 with your husband in that room. Oh, Ira, I hear you do a great job, blah, blah, blah. It'll happen. So it was nice to hear that, even if she didn't mean it. But it was nice to hear it.
Ira, I know you were impressed when we got there very early. Before the party, you were impressed by Donald Penn's embrace of me, my physical embrace.
Donald Penn loves Joe Bucks fan. Yeah. Absolutely loves Joe Bucks fan. I couldn't tear him away. I'm trying to, I'm with my wife. We're trying to go over and see where this party is. And Penn wouldn't let us go, man. He likes some of the moves. He loves Pierre Paul. He thought that was a great move by the Bucks. Yeah,
very interesting how much he reads JoeBucksFan.com still. He's stays on top of it. Very interesting stuff. All right, let's get to some news, Ira. Here we are. We're having breakfast with Dirt Cutter. You've finished stuffing your face with all sorts of proteins.
And he brings a cup of coffee to the table. That's it.
He said afterwards he didn't want to get food in his teeth. That he's just paranoid about food in his teeth. Anyway, which I can't blame the guy. He's got cameras on.
And Jeneline had a banana. That was about it.
Arabelle swivelled down bacon, sausage, eggs. Jeneline has a banana.
Funny, Ira, you don't sit next to me, but you sit next to Jeneline. Very interesting. So there's Dirk Cutter, and he says that Ali Marpet is moving to left guard. We want to put him next to Donovan. What do you make of this, Ira?
I can't believe he's that definitive in March about Marpet. I mean, things are in motion now. Look, things can change. If Nelson's there at 7 and they draft him, things could change. Although Steve, I think, seems to think Nelson would play right guard and Marpet would play left. The big news, I think, the takeaway is Caleb Benenock's in play now.
Yeah.
He's in play. Look, he flashed a few things last year. He doesn't have much experience. Maybe they want to get younger up front, although it's a fairly young front with Smith and Marpet. But they got Dotson on the right side. Jensen's a veteran. I'm going to say this before you do, Lee. Stop messing with Ali Marpet. Stop messing with him. And by that, I mean, you already moved him to center. He was doing well at right guard. Everybody admitted that. Why would you mess with a good thing, Lee? I don't understand why you would cater to Sweezy or Benenock and not cater to one of your best players.
Well, you sort of answered your own question. I'm of the mind that, and you kind of hinted at it before, it's still March. September's, 6 months away? I would not be shocked. Sweezy is the unknown. He's still unable to participate in football activities. He still doesn't have medical clearance. It would not shock me one bit whatsoever after the draft if they get this Nelson character. Marpet's back to right guard. Nelson's at left guard. Bye-bye, Sweezy. Would not shock me whatsoever.
Are you getting, Steve, your vibes are pretty good, your instincts. Are you getting any vibes after last night and today that Nelson could be in play at 7 for the Bucks?
Well, why not? I mean, I don't have any new vibes from all the chit-chat last night. With, of course, we did more than just stand next to Bill Belichick, talk to a million people. Lee, myself, working that crowd.
I talked to Sims last night, Chris Sims.
Sure.
And he follows the Bucks closely. He follows Notre Dame very closely. And I brought up Nelson's name. And he said, this kid has to be in play for the Bucks. He has to be. He's that good. And he said, he's better than Zach Martin. He's better.
Mm.
And Zach Martin almost became a Buck that year. I don't remember if it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago. They were very interested. Light was very interested in Zach Martin. He's playing right guard for the Cowboys, and he's an outstanding player. He's a Pro Bowl player. According to Sims, who says, I watch every Notre Dame game, every one of them, Nelson is a rare, rare prospect at guard. They don't come along very often.
Well, I think the simple takeaway, and of course, we spent a lot of time talking to Jason Light last night, off the record kind of stuff, but clear from Dirk Cutter this morning as well, is the simple, direct, unwavering takeaway is they went into this season saying, we got to get a lot tougher in the trenches and overhaul them.
Wasn't that our theme, Steve?
Right. So if we go with that theme, then Nelson makes a heck of a lot of sense if they want to put the icing on the cake here. But I can't make the leap to say that they're definitely going to do that. but certainly it's there for the taking, possibly.
Lee with big holes at corner and running back, depending on who's there. And you wouldn't think Barkley would drop to seven. You wouldn't think so. But if he's there, I think the Bucs have to seriously consider him. By the way, I talked to Sims about Barkley also. And I'm not trying to build up Chris Sims like the next Mel Kiper, but Chris Sims knows what he's talking about. He's got a big career ahead of him, a second career. I said, is Barkley a can't miss? Is he a no doubter? He said, there's no chance he's not going to be a great player. There's not a chance.
Wow.
I said, Kajana Carter, possibly? Absolutely not. Saquon Barkley is absolutely the real deal.
Oh, Barkley. So I was thinking Chubb.
He's talking about Barkley. Barkley is absolutely the real deal.
Well,
and if that's true, and he's there at seven, they got to look at him.
And this is one of the reasons why I hate mock drafts, because they change every week, not based on anything but whims and guessing and throwing things up against the wall. But, you could logically go through the top seven of the draft and come to the conclusion Chubb is there, Nelson, or even Barkley. But, boy, what kind of decision that would be.
That's the big three, Steve. That's the big three.
Well, I guess what could be an indicator here from what we learned this morning, Dirk Koetter said during the breakfast that the Buccaneers, the first we've heard of this, the Buccaneers were in play making a run at one of the top running backs in free agency. Now, that tells you they see their quote-unquote need, which is comforting, right? Because you never know with the Bucs at running back. But I find that very interesting. And it leads you to believe that, well, if they were going after a Carlos Hyde, pick any
whoever, Deion Lewis.
It makes you wonder, would they lean that much more toward a Barkley if they can't get that need? And there's only two real running backs on the roster now. So maybe that's an angle there. I asked Dirk about rookie running backs this morning. And, of course, it was sort of a setup, but you never know what he's going to say. But he went right to actually said that's the easiest question I've had all day. And this was late in the game. And he said...
While Lee and I were doing that, we're running around to 31 other coaches.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're sitting on your keister.
Yeah, I'm snuggled up to Rick Stroud there. So he said pass blocking, that these guys, rookies aren't good at it, and they don't teach it in college because it's the last on the list of things that you would work on with a college running back.
What do they call that, pass pro?
Yeah, and they run out of hours, he said, with the 20 hours of practice time. They run out of time, and pass blocking always suffers, and that's that. So
that was a knock on Peyton Barber, right, Lee?
It was
a knock.
So who knows what Cutter's doing. I asked him about Charles Sims and filling that role, and, he wasn't really talking. But they need a running back.
Now, Lee, he also said, and I think you were gone by this point, but he I think rightfully said, this draft is crammed with exciting prospects at defensive tackle. Defense, not pass rushers. Mm-hmm. Defensive tackle. He didn't rule out the possibility of adding another defensive tackle with a premium pick, not necessarily first round. Lee, we've heard about Vita Vea, often. But, Steve, it's obvious from what Koetter said and just the common sense. Running back and cornerback. He feels very good about overhauling the defensive line, and I think he should, especially with the Pierre Paul deal. But he talked about flexibility, and we've talked about it on the website. Maybe he's been reading our stuff. Flexibility heading into the draft, where I think without that Pierre Paul deal, I think Light would have been under a lot of pressure to come up with Bradley Chubb.
Yes, I agree.
I not everybody agrees with that, but I feel that way.
I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying. Yeah, if they didn't get JPP, not only would he be under pressure to get Chubb, but I think even more pressure if Chubb isn't there to trade down and get the guy from UTX's San Antonio Davenport.
Yeah.
Get Davenport. Who's
not worth the seventh pick?
He's like mid, maybe late, but not number seven, no. But I agree wholeheartedly with you, Ira.
Ira, I want to tap into your sage wisdom here. I asked Koetter about this, and it's dicey. It's one of these things that requires the wisdom of your 50, 70 years covering the NFL. look, if you look at the reality, Jason Pierre-Paul played 90-something percent of the snaps. The Bucs have talked about it. He's a I-want-to-play-every-down kind of guy. But they also just signed Vinnie Curry. And you have to wonder what's going through Curry's mind after he thinks, okay, now Now they got Golston, Spence, and other guys. But
Steve, that's where Curry's versatility is going to help.
No, I understand that, but I asked Cutter and I ask you, you know that they want to limit the snaps of JPP to try to preserve him for a couple of years, keep him fresh, try to get two more good years out of him with McCoy and build for a all-the-way kind of run here. But I asked Cutter about how do you pull snaps from JPP, you know, and manage that. And he said, yeah, we do want to get it down, the snap number down, but he wants to play every game. And now you got a new position coach and competition. You think this is a big challenge for Cutter?
I don't think this is a concern at all, Lee, because you know what? Coach is coach, Dirk. And you're paid to mix things up and talk to Mike Smith about getting a rotation. And I mentioned, and Cutter jumped right on it, because the obvious model is the Eagles. That's the obvious model. 7 or 8 defensive linemen that rotate, and they're fresh in the fourth quarter with the game on the line. And look what happened. Look what happened in the Super Bowl. The biggest play of the game, arguably, is the stripping of Brady with 2.5 minutes left. Brady with 2.5 minutes left, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You're in trouble. And he got the ball back, it turned out, with 45 seconds left, and it's a difference, and no timeouts. Different situation. But, you know, Brandon Graham made a play in the fourth quarter, and he's fresh. And not a lot of teams are fresh. You know, Brady's dropping back 50 times. Lee,
yeah.
It takes a lot out of you. So to answer your question, I think the Bucs have gone a long way. Look, they've added 4 defensive linemen, and then when you count Golston, McCoy, and Spence as returning players, assuming Unrein makes the team as a free agent, that's 7 guys, Lee. That's 7 guys up front already. Maybe you add 1 more in the draft, maybe. And all of a sudden, you have the makings of that kind of rotation. I don't see any way Pierre Paul's playing 92%, nor should he this year.
Nor should he.
Nor should he.
And I was talking to Dan Pompey. I know you know who Dan Pompey is.
He made a great presentation for Brian Urlacher and got him
Did
in
he?
As a first-time guy.
Yeah. For our listeners, Dan Pompey, longtime Bears beat writer, worked for the Sun-Times,
well
for the Tribune.
Well
yeah,
respected.
real good dude. Yeah, like you said, well-respected. I asked him about Unrein. And Unrein said, Pompey said about Unrein, no, he's not a Pro Bowler. No, he's not a Hall of Famer. But he was a good, solid foundation guy. He told me he thinks the Bears goofed up. He thinks that's an under-the-radar move that the Bucs made that's going to make them a better team. He was really high on Unrein. He said, no, he's not going to be an all-star, but he's just one of those solid plug-in. You can always depend on him. You can always bank on him. And just a good foundation player. And so he thought the Bucs got lucky with Unrein.
You know, Steve, depth and flexibility, I think, are the themes along with toughening the trenches. And in terms of flexibility, look what you got there. Marpet now can play 2 positions. He's got experience at center, at least. And, you know.
And did Cutter, by the way, not say that he thinks Marpet can play any inside position?
Yes. And Jensen can also switch to guard in an emergency.
In a pinch, yeah.
In a pinch. And they got Evan Smith. So flexibility is important. And, of course, depth. And the Bucs haven't had quality depth. Lee, injuries wiped this team out. And the difference between the starter and the backup is a quantum jump. And the best teams, that's not the case.
Well,
not the case.
You could make an argument last year, Ira, when the Bucs were down 3 starters on the offensive line. Offense arguably played the best it's played all season, last month. And they were down 3 starters. Now, they were down 2 starters. A third one went out against Green Bay, if I recall correctly. Offensive line was garbage that day. I mean, it was terrible. But they rebounded. So you can make an argument the offensive line was better when they were down 3 starters.
Steve, one other point Cutter made to one of my questions is there's no denying it, Steve. There's no way to pretty it up. Winston and Jackson have to develop a lot better timing than they've had because Cutter continues to say, Steve, he had a chance, you know, he said it before and he had a chance to back off it and he doesn't back off it. In the words of CNA, doubles down. They love to say that. Steve, you were there when he said it. The guy's open. He's open deep. He's open on a slant. And for whatever reason, he didn't get the ball.
Well, it was very interesting because Cutter said that they created a film of every time that DeSean Jackson was open and they watched all of them, then why they didn't get him the ball. And, man, it was almost – I felt sitting there – I don't know if you were there for that part, Ira, but I felt like Cutter was holding back saying Jameis didn't get him the damn ball. And
Now, in the past, he said maybe we didn't have enough time. He had some mitigating things. Today, he didn't.
Today, it was like, okay, these are all the times that he's open, and we should have gotten him the ball, and he didn't get the ball. He didn't blame Jameis, but that's not a big leap there, from especially the way Cutter presented it.
And he reiterated, Lee, while they have a lot of weapons on paper, and they do, especially, with the rise of the rookie last year.
Godwin.
Godwin. But Jackson is a unique player. He's a game breaker. He's proven it over the years. He makes big catches. He's not the little bubble screen 7-yard guy. And they're missing that element. They're missing it. And we don't even have to talk about pass interference calls that they're not getting, that they haven't been getting. But every other team seems to get them, and the Bucs don't. So, Steve, you've asked, why not get rid of DeSean Jackson? Godwin's come on strong, and, maybe you get a second-round pick.
That's a question for next year now.
It's a question. I think in Cutter's mind, and I think rightfully so, this guy can help us win, DeSean Jackson. He brings an element that they don't have, and I think that's fair.
Oh, the other element of that DeSean Jackson chatter from Cutter was he emphasized DeSean has not lost a step.
Yes.
Everything to possibly say it's not DeSean, which Lee has brought up before and we've talked about, that he doesn't want to say anything. There's no disparaging hint toward DeSean Jackson, so that throws it on the quarterback and the play caller, and if the guy's open.
Now, Lee, you think part of that is they don't want to piss off DeSean Jackson? Is that part of your thinking?
You mean Cutter speaking out like this?
Yeah, Cutter speaking.
Oh, I'm convinced of it. Yeah. Cutter knows that, how can I say this? Diva, I don't know if diva is the right word, but I just think DeSean.
We know how wide receivers are.
Yeah, DeSean Jackson, you could tell, has a little bit more of frail personality than Jameis. Jameis, you could say, Jameis, you sucked on that play, and he'd agree with you. He wouldn't get mad. Yeah, you're right.
There might be something today.
I wrote a story this week on JoeBucksFan.com where Cutter was talking about Jameis at the Combine. And in that interview, it was on NFL Radio. It was on NFL Radio, serious NFL Radio. And in that interview Cutter had on radio, you could tell where, Jameis doesn't, he's got thick skin. He could take it. Where I don't know, DeSean might get aggravated and might stomp off the field or pout or whatever. Jameis is not that kind of guy. So Cutter is playing some mind games there. He knows who can take the heat and knows
That's
who
part
might
of
get
being
offended.
A good coach.
Yeah,
part of being
knowing your
coach.
Players. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sensitive area. And plus, you know what? If that film shows that DeSean Jackson's open, he doesn't want DeSean Jackson speaking to the media saying, man, I'm open.
That's it.
And then you got a whole nother firestorm. But I want to go back to the competition angle, Ira, that you didn't bring up on the D-line, because I'm most happy. Think about last year, right? Bucks come in. Okay, Noah Spence, you're gifted this job. Will Golston, we just re-signed you for $7 million. You got this gig. Ayers, you're coming back off a good year. McCoy's in there. Baker, here's your job. You don't have to do crap in training camp, Baker. Here you go. Everybody had a gift. This year, outside of JPP and McCoy, there's a lot of competition. And obviously, Bo Allen's looking to get in on third down if he can. I just like the whole vibe that we're missing so much. Plus, now you got Buckner on top of that, who's going to be screaming his ass off. If he thinks somebody's better who's not on the field, he's going to be going to Cutter saying, I don't care. This guy's better than this guy. Get him out there. Even if it's Golston playing over
Curry. That's a great point,
Curry,
Steve. The competitive juices have been raised. Lee, I'm just looking ahead. And, of course, Spence is the big question mark. But I think this is the ideal situation for Mike Smith. If he could put his finger on it on third down, third and eight. This is what I think Mike Smith wants. He wants Curry inside next to McCoy. He wants Pierre Paul, who's played a lot on the left edge and successfully, put him on the left side and put Spence on the right side where he's comfortable. On paper, that's not a bad group.
No, it's not a bad group.
And the fact that Curry can move inside, that's where Curry, I think, can make his move and get his playing time on the money down.
Well,
the money down.
I already know you and I were both hounding other coaches at the breakfast this morning. And I can tell you, I talked to two NFC coaches, specifically brother of Chucky and Jason Garrett, both about JPP. Jason Garrett could not wipe the smile off his face. Like, thank God, I don't have to face this guy twice a year anymore. He was just, he could not take the smile off his face. Just constantly beaming, like just talking about how JPP's disruptive, how he gets after the quarterback.
There's a sense that there's plenty left in Pierre Paul's tank.
Yeah, everybody needs to go to JoeBucksFan.com and read Lee's story about Jay Gruden talking about Jason Pierre-Paul, and eventually Lee's going to type up the Jason Garrett stuff. But it's so telling, right? Because, and that's what you can learn here at an owner's meetings when you talk to the coaches. Damn, when's the last time the Bucks had a defensive end where anybody said that? I mean, I don't think even in when Jacquees Smith got hot, I don't think they were really saying that.
Maybe the one Michael Bennett
year.
Yeah,
Michael Bennett year.
When's the last time you heard of a defensive end? And this is what Jay Gruden was telling me. He was like, he tried a couple screen passes on him. And he's like, you can't. I mean, he almost picked him off.
Yeah.
He's a guy so athletic.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I heard that. Speaking of which, from any Bucks defensive end.
And I love the fact that he's played a lot of left end. You think of the pass rushers coming off that right edge, the blind side. Pierre Paul has played a lot of left end and played it effectively.
Sure. And you know what? With the snaps for Jason Pierre-Paul, the more I think about this, Ira, you know how this goes. The Bucks cannot go 1-3 this year. They cannot have a slow start. They can't just do the same dance they've been doing without the fans freaking out and the Glazers saying, what the hell's going on? Burn out Jason Pierre-Paul early. Get him out there for the first four games. Let him play as much as he wants. If he's good and he's on fire, damn, this team has to find a way to go 2-2, 3-1, and end the madness.
Yeah. Lee, they haven't gotten out of September with a winning record in a long time. And you know, people talk about quick starts in games, and that's also an issue. But quick starts in season. Stop digging a hole.
Yes.
You know, like for example, 2 years ago, guys, they had a 5-game winning streak late in the season and still didn't make the playoffs. It wasn't good enough because they were coming from 3-5. They was 3-5 that year after that Oakland and Atlanta game.
This last year, 2-6. What the hell are you doing?
When's the last time they had a winning record after September? Was it Raheem? The 10-win season?
I think it was 2011, the year they started 4-2.
Yeah, and 4-2 in 2011.
And they lost
right,
the
and they fell off the map.
They fell off the map.
Yeah, they went to London. Actually, and
you know what? Chiano was 6-4, but I think they were 1-3 that year,
yes.
And they came back.
Yes.
So
usually they're 1-3.
Yeah, not since Raheem. Yeah, at 1-3. That's what we do. But they gotta stop that. Now, Ira, we're half an hour into the podcast. Edmore's Cadillac Tampa. That's where you have to go. Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. Cadillacs are affordable. Hit the websites, EdmoresCadillacTampa.com, EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com. It's there's no reason not to start there.
And you and I might be taking a little jaunt down there
in
a couple
of
weeks.
It's not maybe. We are. We're busy. We're busy.
There you go.
Now, Ira,
you haven't mentioned Gruden and Doug Martin. I know that's coming up down the line, too.
It's just so mind
so much on your
all
mind.
All right, Ira, we'll just do this quickly because it's given me, as you would say, agita. Lee, I told him I think he was in disbelief for 5 seconds. Tell us what John Gruden said to you when you asked him about, John, Doug Martin, what are you seeing here?
You know, they did all 32 coaches at the same time, which is unusual. Usually they do 16 and then the next day 16.
It's ludicrous.
And so, but some coaches were swarmed over. Belichick's always going to be swarmed.
Peterson,
obviously. Gruden had a lot of people. A lot of people, because he's been away for a decade.
Yeah.
Well, I came in about 30 minutes in, and I snuggle right up to Chucky. You know, I'm standing there. There's no seat. Can't get a seat. There's 10 seats, all taken. But I snuggle right up to him. I put my arm on his shoulder, so he knows who's asking it. Like, with my voice, he's not going to know, right, Lee? And I said, what'd you see in Doug Martin that you targeted him? You made him an early target in free agency. And he starts telling me how, you know, I saw him have a lot of good years in Tampa. He needs a fresh start. He's got to stay healthy. And he made a big point about we got a good value because we didn't give him a lot of money. That was a big – his first line was, well, we didn't sign him to a $15 million contract. So he thinks the risks are minimal. And then I'll let Steve come in and
you finish it off.
He also hearkened to a Hall of Fame coach, who Gruden was very close to, Bill Walsh. Because I still remember Bill Walsh visiting, it must have been 2006, training camp.
Did he?
You know, yeah, he came to Tampa, and that's when I got him alone, and I was asking him for some of his philosophies, and I always remember him saying, Ira, the one thing I learned maybe from Paul Brown, you know, because he worked under Paul Brown in Cincinnati. It's always better to get rid of a guy a year too early rather than a year too late. And so... Now Gruden, in asking, answering a question about Doug Martin, alludes to Bill Walsh once again. And he says, one thing I learned from Bill Walsh is, if a guy has played great in this league, if he's proven he has done that, there's a chance he can do it again. And Gruden saw Doug Martin have two rather extraordinary seasons, as you always point out. Two out of five or six, Kaufman. Two out of five or six.
There's a chance you would pass on good tater tots, but what are the odds of that?
I once wrote a good column in 2008, so maybe the thing applies to me too. But
why don't you tell your listeners, since it's the Ira Kaufman podcast, what Walsh said about Steve DeBerg?
Well, it's one of the greatest lines ever said in pro football circles. And I like Steve DeBerg because I see him a lot at Buck alumni or whatever. And, Steve DeBerg was the 49er quarterback before Montana got that job. So I think Walsh's first couple of years, it was Steve DeBerg. And they would go 5-11 or 6-10 before Montana came along and, in 1981 and turned everything around. And somebody asked him about Steve DeBerg and the great Walsh. Just good enough to get you beat. Just good enough to get. I mean, that's devastating. That's devastating. But DeBerg had a long career. He had a long career.
Did he not come out of mothballs at age of 42 for the Falcons?
I don't remember that, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he went deep into his career. Unfortunately, I've heard he's not. He's got some brain-related issues, which are probably football-related, but,
Chucky thinks that Martin is hungry, and the fact that he signed a contract which was rather minimal, all things considered, is an indication that Martin knows his place in this league right now, his reputation, and he wants to get back to where he was as a rookie with the Bucs.
I wrote over the weekend, Ira, that Martin actually, and in a video the Raiders put out, in that video it explained that, and again, sanctioned by the Raiders because they put it out, Chucky went to see Martin. He flew to see Martin. He didn't say, Doug, come on out here, I'll talk to you. Chucky, maybe he was making a trip back to Tampa, who knows what, but he really went out of his way to rope in Doug Martin. And, we wish Doug Martin well. No ill will. I would love to see him do well. I just would be shocked. But, you never know. And, obviously, we talked to Donald Penn last night. They've got a strong O-line. And
I guess
it's a good spot for him.
They got Marshawn Lynch's back, right?
Yeah, it's a great spot for Doug Martin to try to revive this thing. Now, Ira, three pieces of housekeeping, and then we will hit on one final big nugget that came out today. So, Sage, first, your podcast on Google Play, it hit the other night. Number three overall.
You're making this up.
I was ready for you to say that, Ira. I have a screenshot to show you.
Come on. This is ludicrous.
Top charts, Google Play.
It's ludicrous,
but here's the proof.
So there you're looking at it right now from Lee on his phone. And congratulations to you. The podcast continues
number
to grow.
Three.
We want everyone to subscribe, Google Play, iTunes, Podbean, leave a review, positive, negative, whatever.
People are saying this is hokum. This is an illusion. It's fake news.
No, it's all there. It's all there, Ira. It's all there. And I want to congratulate you, Ira, for your appearance with Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk.
Last Friday.
PFT Live.
Excellent.
I had a long chat with Florio last night, spent some time with his wife. I'm surprised he left me alone with her for 30 seconds, but it was only about 30 seconds. Anyway. You're definitely one of his favorite guests, and like I told you, he always keeps you long. He had producers screaming in his ear, get out, gotta get out. He wouldn't get rid of you, and you're the only guy to ask him questions he's like the master interrogator, and you're like, Michael, I got a question for you.
And Lee, now I got Florio checking into the Jameis Winston investigation. Maybe we can move this thing along.
Well, he had a salient point on that segment, which obviously football fans can enjoy on NBC Sports Network. And they can also get off iPlay and Google Play as well, or iTunes, excuse me, and Google Play. But his point was, this is not a legal investigation. This is a public relations investigation. And when the NFL has all their ducks in a row, in case there's going to be blowback, then you'll see some action. Thought that was a hell of a point.
Steve, nobody's talking about this Winston investigation nationally. Nobody.
Well, that's one of the points I wanted to make, Ira. I sat with Dirk Cutter 53 minutes at the breakfast this morning. And anybody in the NFL, most of them are here, and they could have come over to ask Bucs questions. Not one national writer made it to the Bucs table, reporter, whoever, to ask a Bucks question.
Not even Schrager?
Not one.
ESPN?
That's how far off the radar. That's how far off the radar the Bucks are.
Wow.
And sure, a couple of national writers popped in, reporters, to ask about rule changes, you know, developing a story.
That's a question they're asking nine different coaches.
Right.
Yeah.
So nobody even came in. Not one question about Mr. Jameis Winston. The guy was the number one pick, face of the franchise. He set records. Nobody cares. That's
future
just
uncertain.
Is.
Future uncertain. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. And like Lee said about Mike Florio's comments, I think the broader way to look at it is, you know, at the NFL, since there are no winds blowing about Jameis that are meaningful to them, they'll sort of wait to see where the wind does blow. Maybe his accusers speaks out, or his accuser's attorney makes a little wave here. But likely they'll just read the tea leaves and float out an answer before the season starts.
Can you imagine dropping this thing in on August 27th after the preseason?
Can you imagine?
Yes, because look at Ezekiel Elliott last year.
But wait a minute. Hold on. My point is, if you do it, you know, April 27th, and the Bucks know where they stand, you know, maybe you're getting Fitzpatrick more work or whatever. There's a lot of ramifications. If you drop this in before the season, so it's not fair. It's not fair.
I completely agree with you, Ira. Every word you said, I agree with. But can you, when you ask, can you imagine? Very much so, I can imagine. Again, last year, November, the Cowboys still had a playoff spot. They were still in a hunt for a playoffs. Ezekiel Elliott gets suspended. Bye-bye playoffs.
Makes the league look bad, Steve. Makes the league look bad.
And that's why Jerry Jones went bananas last year.
Makes them look bad, but they don't seem to care enough about the fans in Tampa that they're going to look bad before.
Do these low expectations and being low on the radar, does that work in the Bucks' favor at all, Steve, as opposed to last year?
Well, no, because within their own fan base, the expectations have been raised with the JPP signing. And if you really start to think about what this Bucks offense is, how could you not have high expectations? I mean, if you believe in Jameis, right? We know the Jameis haters are out there. But if you believe in Jameis and you look at all the weapons.
And they're going to get a running back in the draft.
You know, you got four legit receivers. You know, think what you want about Adam Humphries, legit NFL player. He's proven himself. And you got two top tight ends, you know, talent-wise.
Split 12 touchdowns between them.
You know, if you get a running back in the draft, people will be excited, and Barber can play. Martin is gone, and he was a stain on the organization.
And now you've added Jensen, you know.
Yeah. You guys have jogged my memory. To go back, this is sort of related, but we hashed the subject out a little bit earlier. I was talking to Ron Rivera, Riverboat Ron, and I said, Ron, last year, the first time you played the Bucks, you had your way with them. Second time was a dogfight. What was the difference with the Bucks? What were they doing different?
That was the Swaggy Baker offsides play.
Exactly.
Right?
I asked him, what were they doing different that they were so much better when they played you the second time? He goes, same old Bucks. So what do you mean, same old Bucks? And he said, they always play better in the second half of the season. And I go, remember we were talking about fast starts?
Fast starts.
And he was saying, he goes, they always play better in the second half of the season. Same old Bucks. And I'm like, well, that's interesting.
Give yourself a chance in September, right, Steve? Give yourself a chance.
Cutter's got to fix that. He has got to fix that. But we'll see. All right, you know, Ira, we had some other things, but I'm going to wrap it right there. And the expectations line that you brought out, I think that the big takeaway for me last night at the party talking with Team Glazer and all kinds of people
and
is...
And Belichick's a girlfriend.
I believe, today, the Bucks really believe that they are close. They believe that the last year was more of a one-off hiccup than not. And I understand that they should approach it that way if they believe it. But, you know, there's a lot to prove here. But I think they think they believe.
Lee, the one undercurrent I would add to that, which is troubling to me, it's troubling, is I understand about the 3-7 in one score games. I understand that. And Cutter mentioned it again today. But the one thing that they don't want to address, but to me, it's one of the elephants in the room, and it's a big one. Two or maybe three times, I think it was three times, they didn't show up on the road. They just didn't show up. They didn't show up.
Especially Dome
Stadiums.
And
then you make it close. I don't care. Arizona.
Atlanta, New Orleans.
Bad.
Didn't show up.
Bad. You didn't show up. You didn't give yourself a chance. Buffalo, the first half, was pretty darn bad. I think, in Buffalo.
You wasn't good.
And so, Steve, you want to dwell on the 3-7 in the one score games, but Steve, you got to show up. You got to show up, and that's way too many times not to show up.
Yeah, they didn't show up for October, so maybe we can put that on the calendar to show up, and that things will get better.
The New Orleans and Atlanta debacles, that's a division foe. You don't just mail it in the first half.
Speaking of mailing it in, Ira, you've got some free food. They're refilling the trough here. So.
Any Riesling on hand, perhaps?
Tie your sneakers and get over it.
All right.